Did you know good copywriting does not come from just the writing itself? It goes way beyond that. Hi, I'm Jared Krauss. I'm the host of the Buying Online Businesses podcast. And today I'm speaking with Chris Silvestri, who is the founder at Conversion Copywriter and Conversion Alchemy, where they help SaaS and e-commerce businesses convert more of their website visitors into loyal and excited customers. He went from software engineering in the industrial automation to copywriting, then to user experience UX design at a usability testing startup. And as a conversion alchemist, he combines everything he learned along the way to help his clients grow exceptionally. Now, in this podcast episode, Chris and I talk about what digital psychology is and how Chris formulated the term and why. Why he did that for himself, why he did that for his branding. There's so many great reasons within that. We also talk about how much work goes into the research when creating clever copywriting and user experience. Chris also talks about how he separates his research into three different areas, what they are, why he separates them into those three different areas, and how valuable and important that is for each step for the user. And then we move on to talking about how to construct a homepage that your audience loves, it speaks to them, and what allows it actually facilitates them taking the next step versus what boring homepage does, which can, in my words, bastardize its relationship with the person who comes to it first by having the wrong sort of USP or, you know, language and things on the page. We also talk about why good copywriting is not about fancy words and the actual writing itself. Instead, we talk about what's far, far more important than that. We also talk about what good branding can do, some examples of good branding, and how you can use these for your own business to extract more profit from it and build more trust and relationship with your audience. And there's so much value in this episode. You guys are absolutely going to love it. I know a lot of you guys are listening here for how to buy a business, and I've got a lot of podcast episodes on that. Also, before you get to growing a business like we talk about in this episode, make sure you do get my due diligence framework if you're looking at buying a business. You can get from buyingonlinebusiness.com/free resources. That due diligence framework takes the guesswork out of how to buy a business. Now let's dive into the pod.
Do you have a website you might want to sell either now or in the future? We have a hungry list of cashed up and trained up buyers that want to buy your content website. If you have a site making over $300 per month and want to sell it, head to buyingonlinebusinesses.co/sell-your-business or email us at info@buyingonlinebusinesses.com because we will likely have a buyer. Details are in the description.
Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jared, for having me. It's so good to be here.
Looking forward to this chat. I am fascinated with something you have and something you talk about, which is digital psychology. The first thing, first can of worms I want to sort of open up. What is digital psychology and what do you mean when you say digital psychology?
Yeah, so it's my way of kind of my branded way of defining what I do. I didn't want to limit myself to talk about copywriting, right? Because a lot of business owners associate copywriting with freelancing, with writing blogs. I wanted to be a bit more specific in what I do, and that's also something that I do for clients, right? Positioning. So the using digital psychology is my way of positioning myself. And when I say digital psychology, I mean that copywriting is mostly about understanding people, and that's the biggest area that I work in. So research for me, it's probably 70% of the work, and then everything else comes after. So I look into every single facet of your potential customers, right? Potential customers and actual customers. So I try to, for every project, I try to understand how they think, how they make decisions, what do they know about the website, what they don't know, and try to fill in the gaps with all the research that I do. So yeah, digital psychology is my way of defining that type of research that I do for my copywriting work.
Cool. And I guess this is a meta sort of question. Are you doing this to distinguish yourself and be a little bit different than everybody else and have your own sort of brand behind it? Is that the sort of ideology mm-hmm. around it? Is because that could be something that people could draw from for their own business as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. It's something that I do to differentiate myself. But I would also say it's the approach that I use, because a lot of what I do also comes from UX design, user experience design. I used to work at an agency as a UX lead as well, after transitioning from being just a copywriter. So all the things that I've learned about how users interact with the website, how they make decisions, how they consume content, all of those insights, I kind of integrate them with everything that I knew about copywriting. So it's both a positioning move, but it's also actually the real description of what I do. I try to do things a bit more deeper than the typical copywriter, maybe.
Love it. I absolutely love it. That's why I'm fascinated and so excited for this chat. I know we're starting off with sort of surface level questions here. We'll get into the weeds and the hardcore value soon. But I want to first ask, who's your typical client? Are they SaaS businesses and e-commerce businesses, or do you ever work with like large blogs as well?
So I would say large blogs, not so much. I've done a couple of website audits for blogs, but not much else. Maybe some conversion optimization work, so doing some testing. Mm-hmm. But typically my clients are SaaS businesses, so between 6 and 8 figure SaaS businesses with not a huge team, between 20 and 100 people, product market fit, and it could also be both bootstrapped or funded, typically Series A, B. For e-commerce businesses, I would say it's quite a different project, because it's also, for e-commerce, you have a lot of, you might have a lot of products on the website. So it's all about the UX navigation, improving the user flow through the website. So for those projects, it's not a very big team. Typically, it's just either a solo founder with a super small team, or just the founder, where basically I interact just with them. And we do this very intimate project. So yeah, mostly e-commerce and SaaS businesses are typical clients.
Love it. Love it. And so let's use SaaS business, for example, as we go through a bunch of the questions I want to ask. And you can relate to any sort of case studies or use studies that you've done and worked with clients in the past. When somebody comes to you, and you mentioned 70% of the work you do is basically in R&D, right? Which is awesome, because it's like what they normally say is if you want to chop a tree down, spend most of your time sharpening the axe, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's dig into some of the data and the metrics and stuff that you look at, because I guess, hang on. Like I'm just trying to think about how somebody here listening to the podcast is thinking like, why start with research? Well, I guess the end product is, it's going to help high conversions. It's going to be great for user experience, navigation, and it's going to just make them feel good about making the purchase, right? So we'll come to that part, I guess. Is there anything that you wanted to add to that before we dive into some of the data points that you look at for R&D?
No, I would have to say I have a very kind of a formulaic, like a structure system that I use to approach these. So if you want, we can just dive into kind of the main areas that I use, or kind of the lenses that I use to see research. So
yes, please.
Yeah. Let's do that. I typically see research in like three areas, right? So we have internal research, which is typically speaking with my client, with their team. So I typically run interviews with the marketing team, product team, especially for SaaS, support team as well. So I try to gather as many insights as possible from their, like, what's their internal view? How do they see the product? And also, this is super interesting when you find that a lot of different team members have different views on value propositions or positioning, right? So I try to be kind of the person who puts them all together and unifies their view. So that's one, the internal research. The second one, it's the customer, user customer research or external research. And I divide them into the two sides, which are the prospect side, so website visitor, someone who's still not a customer, and the customer side. And that's because I want to know, what's their view? What are they thinking before buying? And what are they thinking after buying? What happens in that transformation, right? In that between. Mm-hmm. And I want to reconstruct the whole journey through those insights. The third area, it's market research. So we can't make decisions in a vacuum. We need to know what other competitors, other businesses are doing in the space. And that's why I run competitor research. I look at reviews, so a lot of reviews on review websites or for e-commerce, Amazon reviews or product reviews, anything that we can find. I categorize them by themes, I organize them, I see what comes up, what people say. Especially, it's super helpful to see what words they use that then we can maybe mirror to them on the website. And the market research is what informs a lot of the positioning that I do. So positioning work, it's also another thing that I work on along with the copy and messaging. Typically when clients, maybe they want to revamp their positioning because they're not sure what they're doing, or they just improve the product. So they want to crystallize it, make it more clear. Maybe their teams are not unified, as I was saying, so they want one single document telling everybody how they should speak to customers, in which media, how, you know. So that's another thing they do. So these three areas are kind of the lenses that I use. So the internal research, external, and the market research. So this is the way that I approach it.
Awesome. So I like the breakdown of like the journey, the two different journeys that people are taking before they buy, and then what are they thinking and what are they trying to do after they buy. When you've got all of this data, which pieces of data apply to, or how do you take it and then implement that into user experience, navigation, and copywriting? And what sort of starts first? Like how do you know? Mm-hmm. You know, do you start with the messaging that you're trying to get across at each different stage that somebody's going through, and then do you turn mm-hmm. that into text and navigation and UX? What does that look like?
Yeah, interesting question. So a lot of times I actually work on the navigation, site structure, UX after I'm done with the copy. And that's because I want to have a clear idea of how many pages we need. Do we need to add a couple more pages to fill in the gaps in the journey? And cool. So I work on that in... first. But even before working on the copy, what I do is I create like a research positioning document where I dive into all the findings, right? So I define anything from user demographic data, psychographic data, so how they make decisions, how they think when they get to the website. And then I divide this into user data, competitor data, and my client's data. So and I typically start with the user data because that's where everything starts and cascades from. So it's kind of the opposite of the research, right? So the research, I start with the client because I want to know, okay, what do they know? What should I know? Like, how should I approach this market? Because obviously working with different clients every time, I have to immerse myself in the product, in the market first. Mm. So with the research, I start with the client, then competitors, and then when users and competitors. When I extract the insights, I do the opposite. Start with the users, competitors, and clients. So because at the end, we end up with the client's positioning and messaging. So it's kind of the opposite. So this is basically what I come up with before writing every single word. I have this huge document that helps inform the way that I write copy. And then I typically start with the homepage. The homepage for me symbolizes the whole journey, right? Because it's the goal of a homepage. It's not
start where we start.
It's not
right?
to sell. Exactly. It's not to sell, but it's basically to sell the next action step. So
ooh,
and that's
like
why
that.
On the homepage, that's where I work very hard to come up with a very good value proposition that includes the positioning of the client. And then I think about what are the primary and secondary action steps that we want users to take, starting from the homepage. Where do we want them to go on the website? What are our priorities? So from the homepage, that's where everything else falls into place after that, typically.
Cool. So let's sort of, I'd love to just know a little bit more about what the homepage, what goes into the homepage. You say that you want to showcase that brand's positioning. And then sell them on the next step to get to the next, you know, the next place that they should be going or we want them to go to give them value and help them. So what are you putting on that homepage to do that? Like, what are some of those things that help position the brand well, that speaks to that user that wants them, that pushes them or drags them, like sort of it lures them into that next sort of actionable step or next page?
Mm-mm. Yeah. So when I mention positioning, what I mean by that, it's that whenever someone lands on a website, the main things that they want to know are, is this right for me? What do you do? Who you do it for? And how you do it in a different, unique way, right? Or better than other solutions. So that's why for me, the homepage always starts with mirroring what they are thinking when they land on the website. So a lot of companies start with the typical, we do this better than blah, 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 right? But the problem is when someone lands on the website and sees that, it's kind of like a pattern interrupt. They are thinking something that's probably different from what you wrote on the page because it's hard to read their minds if you don't do the research.
Are you saying that people when people get to the homepage, typically they think they need something else than what they really need and you need to speak to them where they're in their journey? Or
no, what I mean is that it's important to mirror exactly what they're thinking on the website, but a lot of businesses don't do that. So they start saying what they do, right? Rather than start like writing what people actually are thinking of wanting. So what I do, the first thing on the homepage, which is the value proposition, which mirrors the positioning, it's stating exactly or getting as close as possible to what visitors are thinking in their minds when they land on a website. And that can be either a problem that they're trying to move away from or an outcome that they're trying to achieve, those two directions, right? Kind of emotional directions, along with obviously the mentioning the solutions that they are looking for. And there's many facets that you can look at this, obviously. Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. Yeah, so that comes down to doing the research and doing the work and find the data of like what solution they're trying to solve or what outcome they're trying to achieve versus burning some space on the homepage of a brand saying we're the best because when that's not actually helping the person understand if your brand or company is going to help them with what they want. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Because maybe the first thing that you mentioned is like throwing a feature or a value proposition out there then maybe it's not even relevant. It's something that you think it's relevant because maybe it's the newest feature that you just put out, right? So yeah, instead it's much better to ease them into the homepage by mirroring what they're thinking and what they're needing in that specific moment, because context in copywriting in UX is everything. So it's also important to understand where are they coming from, what do they know, how much they know about the product. So all those little things contribute in coming up with this value proposition. So what they're thinking is the first section of the homepage that I would always start from.
Yeah, cool. And then where to next? Is it too much to say, hey, start here and get a free trial? Like, is there typically more easing into it and more steps they need to take before they are sold on, you know, giving up an email address or some sort of information?
No, it depends. The fact of presenting a call to action right away or not, that for me, that typically depends on what types of decision maker these people are. Are they fast decision making? So do they need just a quick push and are also maybe in a rush on the website and just want to get started? Or do they first need some education and some easing into the whole thing? So based on that, based on what I see from the research, and also because I do a lot of user interaction tracking analysis. So I don't know if you ever used Hotjar, something like Hotjar, to track heat maps where you see where people click. So I look at those and I see, okay, are people really clicking on this button or not? Should we remove it? Should we move it down? Should we adjust things? So based on all those observations, I decide where to place the calls to action. And basically try to satisfy the right types of decision maker, whether it's slow decision maker, fast decision maker, more emotional, more logical. And that's where the digital psychology aspect comes in again.
So then you move into testing. Well, is that, you know, what's sort of your next step after that, I guess, before going through and testing? Or are you testing the whole way through? Like, are you doing this in phases where it's happening out over, you know, a few months?
So at the beginning, the only test that I might do at the start, it's the usability testing. So you basically have real users go through the website, users that are similar, are not the exact target audience, but are similar, might be similar to the target audience. So they use the website and you get recorded videos that you can take a look at and see where, like, how do they go through the journey, where they click. They also comment on their experience. So you can hear them talk through their experience, seeing what they think about the website, what struggles or challenges they're having. So that's the only test that I do at the beginning. And that's because it's super, super quick and super easy and super convenient to do. And it doesn't take away time from the research, but at the same time, it's kind of like a shortcut into understanding the 80-20 things that we are struggling with the website, like what's broken right at the top. Usability testing is a super fast way to understand what's broken, what needs adjusting. So that's the only kind of testing that I do at the top. Once I'm done with the copy, so homepage, all the other pages, I turn the copy into wireframes, which is basically the layout of a website, not non-designed, non-branded, just like black and white layouts that then a designer takes and turns into mockups. At this stage, so we have two options typically. So we could even just test on the wireframes, which is very fast, and you can do that with some platforms. It's mostly useful to, if you can do some quick usability testing with the wireframes using your audience, you can get good insights on, do they understand the value proposition? Is this clear? Could they navigate this page if it was designed? Because with wireframes, you could even create like quick prototypes that people can click around and kind of navigate a simulation on the website. And that's mostly useful for understanding, is your messaging good or do we need to adjust before even getting into design and development? And then, we get into the mockups. So another test that you could do could be creating a high fidelity prototype with the mockups. So basically it would look like the real website. You would just make a couple of areas clickable and have people go through it. And then after that's done, typically my client takes it on. They have a developer they're working with. And we might do some further testing once the website is up. It depends, because sometimes my clients might take, I don't know, a month or two before getting it developed, right? So that's another stage, another part of a project. It's almost like a separate project, the testing and validation.
Yeah, got ya. So that's the front end. That's, I guess that is the design, copy, and UX for the front end. How different is it once somebody, say we're talking about a SaaS business and somebody becomes a member or subscribes to that software? How different is it once they've started that journey? Do you go into a specific onboarding sequence and maybe a tour that showcases some branding, the most important features based on what R&D you've done that people are most likely coming to the software for? Like, I'm just making stuff up, so that's how I would think about it. But yeah, what does it look like? Is that right, or am I just off the mark?
Yeah, no, yeah, that's correct. That's correct, actually. So my work, I work a lot on the front end, as you defined it. So a lot of like website copy, sales email campaigns, landing pages. I also worked at a couple of like backend in product copywriting projects. So I wrote a couple of product tours. I'm working actually now at optimizing onboarding emails that I wrote a couple of years ago. That's a very interesting part of the project, right? Because you have these users who actually, even for the emails, they might just be prospects. They might not be customers, right? So, for example, in the project that I'm working on now, we are trying to optimize emails where people signed up for an account, but they still haven't bought, right? And the goal is for them to sign up for a 7-day paid trial. So it's not even a free trial. So it's kind of like pre-selling them on the product. And we have these 6, 7, 8 emails that we're trying to optimize. And that's where my process comes in a faster package, right? So because even though we're just optimizing email, research always has to come in, because I don't jump on the project just guessing, oh, let me look at this email, I'm going to change this copy and it's going to work better, right? So we don't do that. So even for this project, I come up with a quick research plan. So 3 surveys, then we're going to look at the surveys, and then we're going to write these emails, improve them, look at the sequence, what's working, what's not. So yeah, that's another thing that I do. And also in product copy, that's very rare for me, writing like UX copy, micro copy in the product. But that can happen. As I mentioned, some tours, intercom, it's a very good tool.
Yeah, cool. So you started off with user experience and then UX design and then moved into copywriting. Is that right?
I actually did 2 years, a year and a half after leaving my old job and old life, but that's another story. I did a year as a copywriter, and then I moved in-house with this agency as a UX designer.
I just missed all of that. Apologies.
I see. No worries.
Sorry, go again. If you can, sorry.
No worries. Before getting into UX design, I started as a copywriter. So I did that for a year and a half after leaving my old job and kind of my old life, which is another story. So I did that for a year as a copywriter, and then I went in-house with this agency as a UX designer, and then back again on my own as a copywriter / UX designer, kind of conversion alchemist, as I call myself.
I love it. Absolute alchemy. So have there been certain mentors that have taught you certain things that are just really good philosophies that have stuck with you in design and, and copyright that would be awesome to share with people?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say I learned a lot from Joanna Weeb at Copy Hackers. They have a lot of great courses, a very good community as well. They just recently launched their YouTube channel, so they have a lot of good, helpful videos. In general, I was just basically virtually stalking all the major copywriters and people that I've admired, like on Twitter or signing up their newsletters. There's another very established SaaS copywriter. His name is Josh Garofalo. Another one is Joel Kletke. So all of those, all of them were kind of my virtual mentors in the way that I was basically stalking everything that they were doing. And funny enough, like we have been working, like chatting, working together online as well. So that's went full circle. Another one that I've always recommended, I don't think people know them enough. It's the Nielsen Norman Group, which is a UX specialized blog content website. And they have very, very good content on how users interact with websites, and both for e-commerce and SaaS, I think, and product as well. So there's a very good info there.
Love it. Love it. Have you read the book, The 16-Word Sales Copy? Is that the one? 16-Word Sales? I think it's like sales Albuquerque or something like that. The 16-Word Sales Letter.
Yeah. I know the guy because he was an Agora copywriter, right? Agora Financial.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know the guy. I didn't read the book, but I know him. I know of him. He's apparently is a very good copywriter, which like an interesting thing. I don't know if you know, but he is like a non-native speaker. I don't know where he's from. Maybe South America or somewhere, so he was awarded one of the top Agora copywriting like awards that they have, which is Agora, for people who don't know it, it's a huge financial publication, online publication. They send out these newsletters and sell products. But the interesting thing for me when I got to know the guy was that it's telling how being a copywriter is not necessarily about writing. It's not about necessarily knowing English, because me, myself, I'm Italian. I'm a non-native speaker. And it tells you that copywriting is a lot about the research, right? A lot about how you take the research, how you do the research, and how you turn it into insights, and how you come up with big ideas for the copy. So that for me was very interesting when I found out about the guy.
Love that. I love that insight and telling people, like, it's funny that most people think, oh, you've just got to write really well, when it's not about fancy words, right? It's about words that connect emotionally with people with where they're at in their journey, that allow them to take the next step that's going to help them. Knowing it's not all about like big fancy words and more so research and development. What are some of the go on.
I was saying copywriting is very conversational in nature, so that should come naturally, and you should just basically mirror how people think and how they want to talk.
How do you get some of the big ideas, and like say you've coming up with a hook or a title or something that's going to just like really grab attention and speak to that audience? Like how much, like I guess there's some science behind it with some research and stuff, but how do you personally, or some others even that you've learned from, get creative and artistic with it that allows you to just really set yourself from the pack?
Interesting. Yeah. If I think about it, most of it comes from immersing myself in the research, as you mentioned. So reading a lot, that helps. So that takes time. Obviously, it's not something that you can shortcut. Maybe with ChatGPT, you can brainstorm a bit better, but still, you have to come up with that insight. But yeah, for example, a quick example that I can give you from a real project. This SaaS, enterprise SaaS company, they basically sold software that integrated other tools, right? So ERP software, so enterprise resource management, financial software, like Salesforce with e-commerce software. They integrated all data from these tools into one interface that you can use to read all the data, right? So when I worked on that project, I kind of collected all the research. I saw what people were saying, and the value proposition that I came up with was something like, finally, your apps speak the same language, right? It's kind of like seeing the tool as a translator of all these apps. And from there, we kept the same theme throughout the website, kind of using it in different funny ways. Also, because the client voice was very witty, very funny in a way. They have a very strong and polarizing personality. And that's also another thing that helps me coming up with ideas. It's understanding the personality of my client's business. Exactly, the brand. That informs a lot of the ideas that I get.
The knowing the brand and having consistent messaging through the brand that is consistent is super and valuable and important for the brand, because it allows the users to see that consistency, and that consistency is a good metric for trust, right? And then being able to stay on brand and use those funny words, play on words, and the witty humor or whatever it is that the brand message is a part of, using that consistently, definitely buys a lot of trust and can be fun, but it can be done in an artistic way as well, right?
Yeah. One thing that I'm learning more and more as I write copy and I get into the space, especially SaaS B2B, which is typically thought of as a boring industry, right? It doesn't have to be boring. And I'm learning more and more that there's room for creativity. So a lot of people say, clear, not clever, right? But at the same time, one thing that I'm learning, especially reading, I started reading a lot of old advertising books, old advertising and legend biographies, right? So one thing that comes up over and over again is that, okay, it's great to do the research, to collect the data, but at the end of the day, what you're saying can be the same, can be kind of like the value proposition, can be the same value proposition that a competitor has. The way that you differentiate yourself, it's both with the positioning, but also with the voice that you use, right? So, and to come up with that unique voice, that unique angle on an idea, on a value proposition, you need to sometimes use creativity. And that's where, that's where the creative spark comes in. It has space, even though research is very important.
That's cool. And I mean, we're not in 1992 anymore. Right? Like, it's not like boring old Microsoft.
Yeah.
You can have some fun with it.
Yeah. Especially with B2B, you would think that you just need to talk about logical reasons for these business buyers to buy, for these business committees to buy. But at the end of the day, it's all people, right? So you have to refer and speak to their emotions as well, to their needs to be validated inside their team, to their desires to be, I don't know, promoted or move up the ladder and other things.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Chris, it's been so good to chat. I've learned so much from you. I'm sure everybody else has. Where can we send people to find out more about what you're doing?
Cool. Yeah, my website is conversionalchemy.net. I have a newsletter. If you want to check it out, it's conversionalchemy.net/newsletter. So yeah, you can check it out there or almost everywhere else. I'm on YouTube, Twitter. You can find me, Christopher Silvestri.
Love it. Love it. Guys, check out the newsletter. I'll put a link to Chris's newsletter in the description. Everybody that is listening, thank you for listening. I hope you got a lot of value. I know I did, and I'll see you on the next one.
See you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, YouTube watcher. If you thought that video was good, you should check out this video here on the two best types of websites beginners should buy. Or check out my playlist on how I made my first 100K from buying websites and how to do due diligence. Check it out. It's an awesome playlist. You'll enjoy it.